Hello, I'm Joe Orlo, and you're listening to the Jewish Activist Network. We're on the air Wednesday nights at midnight to 1 a.m. every Wednesday night at midnight. Again, I'm Joe Orlo, your host right here on the Jewish Activist Network, and we invite you to be part of our program by calling in anytime during our show. The call-in number, 718-569-0921. Please call in 718-569-0921 to the Jewish Activist Network right here on AM 620.
Thank you for being with us. Thank you for the introduction. Our website is www.JewishActivistNetwork.com. Again, www.JewishActivistNetwork.com. You can get emails from us by simply emailing us at media@JewishActivistNetwork.com. We are talking today about the Har HaBayis Temple Mount Awareness Day, which is going to be on March 16th, 2010. We might be getting a call-in from Yosef a little bit later on to tell us a little about it. If not, though, we'll just tell you about it. Recently, Israel decided to declare Me'oras HaMachpelah and Kever Rachel as archaeological and Jewish heritage sites. In fact, what the world, there was backlash. Could you believe that there was actual backlash from the United States? There was backlash from the United States and the United Nations for designating, basically, that they are Jewish heritage sites. And, of course, that's absurd, but this should open our eyes to understand that doesn't really matter what you do. They're going to be against us anyways. Therefore, what's the point? What's the point of trying to please them?
Let me see if I follow. In other words, these two locations in the land of Israel, again, they were the Me'oras HaMachpelah,
The Me'oras HaMachpelah, that is the Cave of the Patriarchs. That's where our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, are buried. And others also, and their wives. And at the same time, Kever Rachel, which was Rachel's tomb, Rachel's tomb. These are sites mentioned in the Bible. We know exactly where they are. They were actually bought. And that in the case of Me'oras HaMachpelah, it was bought for money by Abraham, our father Avraham. And Kever Rachel was where Rachel was buried by Yaakov, our father Jacob, or Israel. And there's rioting, actual rioting that reached us. The Arabs are rioting about that.
And what did the government in Israel, what statement did they make, or what did they show to their intention to be regarding these places?
They stated that these two sites are going to be designated as archaeological and Jewish heritage sites. So that means there would be some money put into them, money to spruce them up, and to make them places for people to go. People go there now, but to make it officially a Jewish heritage site. I don't think there's anything that they're saying even that's should be a cause for anybody to be upset. So they started rioting there. They're rioting in the Har HaBayis. And an amazing thing happened this past Sunday, that the police actually made that Muslims, they severely restricted Muslims going up to the Har HaBayis on the day that they were rioting, which was on Sunday. And they allowed Jewish people to go up, something which usually is unheard of. But they responded very strongly to the attacks. They were actually throwing rocks and threatening people and anybody who was going up under the Har HaBayis that day.
When you say the Arabs are rioting, I mean, my understanding is usually these may be to some extent spontaneous, but often organized by some leadership within the from among the Arabs. And was there any statement made why they're rioting? Did they have any kind of chance? What was it that they were concerned about?
Well, it was a combination of factors. One is this thing that happened that Israel declared these two sites as a Jewish heritage sites. There's also simultaneously, but independently, an International Temple Mount Awareness Day for the Har HaBayis, which was announced. And if anybody wants to take a look at that, you can look at temple.org/temple-mount-awareness-day.htm. So I guess you go within their site to get to this. So So this is going to be March 16th. And this announcement, they heard about it, and it was immediate attacks against the Jewish people, and the truth is even non-Jewish people. Anybody not Muslim, they were attacked on Hayabayat, on the Temple Mount. And I think it's a very nice thing that the police stood up for what's right in this case. And they went and they severely restricted the people who were attacking. A lot of times it's the other way around. They'll just close it down to all people who are not Muslim because of the attacks that are being perpetrated on the Mount against Jewish people and others.
So could
I think that's a positive thing. No?
I would comment on the police action. Could I surmise correctly or guess that the reason the Arabs are rioting, since we don't have any specific information about what they might have been saying while they were rioting or any kind of signs, the Arabs make the claim, if I understand, that they have the right they make the claim that the land of Israel belongs to them. And all of the three things that you mentioned, that the that the government in Israel is going to be dealing with the Maras Machpelah, where the patriarchs are buried, and the matriarchs, and they're going to be dealing with Kever Rachel, also a matriarch where she's buried, and the Har HaBayis there's going to be a Temple Awareness Day sponsored by a non-governmental organization. All these have a common thread that they say there's a Jewish connection to the land. So
yes, absolutely.
So
as a matter of fact, I would really like and I would hope that actually the Temple Mount, that should be the third thing that should be put on the list as archaeological or Jewish heritage site.
So,
right now, Jewish people have a very hard time going up there. And there's constant destruction going on by the Arab Waqf on the Mount. There's digging and destruction of tremendous amounts of artifacts. And actually, the archaeologists in Israel have been complaining to the government, not just religious people, but because of the destruction of archaeological treasures that are going on there constantly and done intentionally. Because they are basically, the Arabs are historic, at this point, the ones, the Palestinians, they're historical revisionists. And they're trying to say, look, there was no temple here. And they're trying to destroy any evidence that they find.
Well, in light of their position being that they want to make a claim to the land of Israel, and at the same time, as you just pointed out, they don't have a historical basis to do it. They don't have the data, the facts, whatever term we want to use, to back up their claim. So it seems reasonable to some extent to me that the Arabs would riot. That's the only tool in their toolbox that they have to go ahead and oppose this. They can't, you know, as much as they may say in many times that they make this claim to land of Israel and they try to claim that the Jews don't have a claim to land of Israel, I have a lot of respect for the Arabs. I don't think they're stupid, and just the opposite. And I think that they understand very well that the Jews have the stronger claim and it's their land. And if they're going to go ahead and fight against the Jews in the land of Israel, the Arabs are going to fight against the Jews, then they really... For all their claims that they make and all their statements they make, when it comes down to the actual fight, they know that that's not going to carry the day for them. So what do they have left? They can use violence, and that's their modus operandi, it seems.
Yeah, and it's good, but the positive thing is, so we know what they're going to do. That's not a question. The question now is what we're going to do.
Well, you mentioned,
and I'm happy,
mm-hmm.
and I'm happy that the response has been. The way it's been this past Sunday, I think is a proper response for them.
But
instead of throwing Jews out, they should throw the rioters out and restrict them from being there.
It's a step in the right direction, but it seems that the Arabs have no difficulty escalating. If they see that rioting, which is, we could call it, term it perhaps low-scale violence, right? It's throwing of rocks, people not being cooperative with the authorities, maybe blockading. But at the same time, the Arabs seem to have no difficulty using weapons and escalating when they see fit, and they even if it means that there will be bloodshed, and even if the greater bloodshed will be on their side. So it's a step in the right direction, but ultimately, what kind of impact is it going to have?
It's hard to say. The impact of the crackdown
the impact on the Arabs. In other words, they're ready to fight. They're ready to fight to say this is their land.
Right, well, because that's what you're saying is true. But so obviously, the impact, if you give in, is worse. There's mm-hmm. no question about it. Because it's, you give a little bit, and they will continue on their path. So now their path is, what they're going to do is going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. Not only question is, are you going to be, are we going to be in a strong position? Or are we going to back up and become in a weaker position, and they're going to still continue? What we do is going to make no difference as far as their attempts. And our fighting back will only make us in a stronger position against their attempts. And our going backwards will make us in a weaker position against their continued attempts. So it's just an issue of, we call it called olam gavah, whoever's stronger. That's all they understand. It doesn't make a difference. It's not an issue of who's right. It's an issue of who's strong. That's the way they look at it. So I gave you before the website, but I didn't need to give you the whole, all that stuff after the slash. It's www.templeinstitute.org. And then there's a big link right in the front of it. Templeinstitute.org. So let me just read this and talk a little bit about this, and I'd like to tie this together with those, the other two sites and the rioting that happened based on Israel declaring the Ma'arat HaMechpelah, the Ma'arat HaMechpelah and the Kever Rachel, the Tomb of Rachel and the Cave of the Patriarchs. And I'm going to tie it all together right after this quick break.
Are you looking for part-time work in advertising sales? The Jewish Activist Network has an opening for a sales representative. Email the Jewish Activist Network for details. The email address is media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. That's M-E-D-I-A, media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. And if you'd like to advertise with the Jewish Activist Network, email us at media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Do you have Shemus at your house or at your shul? Allow us to handle your Shemus for you. We handle your Shemus in accordance with Halacha. Call 917-517-7486 for your Shemus handling. $20 for a 30-pound plastic kitchen bag, $8 for a plastic shopping bag. Larger quantities are eligible for our discount pricing. Call now for details. The number is 917-517-7486. Pesach is coming. Now is the time to schedule your Shemus handling. The number once again, 917-517-7486. Do you have email? Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails and Rabbi David Einenson's emails. The Jewish Activist Network emails are once a week and give you information about our upcoming shows, including links to background information. Rabbi Einenson's emails are a brief Divrei Torah that are immediately relevant to our lives. Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails by sending an email to media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Subscribe to Rabbi Eidenson's emails by emailing media@secretscale.com. That's media, M-E-D-I-A, at secretscale, secretscale.com. If you do shopping in Midwood, Borough Park, Sheepshead Bay, Bensonhurst, Bay Ridge, Mill Basin, Crown Heights, or the Five Towns, pick up a free copy of The Views, a weekly available in many stores. To advertise in The Views, 718-377-8016. And we're back live with the Jewish Activist Network, right here on AM 620, broadcasting Wednesday nights at midnight to 1 a.m., the call-in number is 718-569-0921. I'm Joe Orla, your host, and we look forward to hearing from you. Please call in 718-569-0921.
Okay, so let's take this one. Let's take this one at a time. So the following organizations are participating in the first annual International Temple Mount Awareness Day. In Israel, the Temple Institute, Organization for the Renewal of the Temple. Okay. Woman in Green, Matat Arim, Manigat Yehudit, the Nascent Sanhedrin, the Temple Mount Heritage Fund. the Organization for Human Rights on the Temple Mount, Radio Free Nachlaot, El Har Hashem, the Temple Mount Advocacy Council, and Israel National Radio. We also have the World Committee for the Land of Israel internationally. We have the Jewish Activist Network, that's us. We support this. B'nai Elim, All for Israel, Americans for a Safe Israel. And we would hope that other people would get involved. We spoke about the halachos last week, times before. There's real halachos out there of what could be done, what cannot be done. It's time that people start thinking and having a positive opening up of the hearts for Hashem, for His people, and for rebuilding on the Temple Mount. I think it's something to think about, and it's something that we should do. We've never had this chance before. This chance was just unavailable for us ever since the Romans came in and we were exiled. We only came onto the land. We only even had it since 1967. It was not a possibility before.
Actually,
the reason that it wasn't, nothing was done there, was not because of any halachic reason.
If I'm not mistaken, just to pipe in here, around the year, I think it was 300, between the year 300 and 400 of the Common Era, there actually was a rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash to some extent. And if I'm not mistaken, maybe one of our callers knows more details and can call in at this time. I think there was an earthquake that somehow destroyed whatever had been started there. They didn't actually complete it, but there was some building going on. So for the historical record to point that
sure.
out.
Sure. Last week we were talking about, I don't have it right in front of me, about one of the Bali Hatosas who tried and attempted to go up and tried to build. And we had a few examples of people who was actually trying to remember the name, who was given permission all the way back in the times of the Romans, Caesar Julius. And he was given permission, and they went and they started to build.
That's probably the case I'm thinking of, yeah.
This is way after this is a few hundred years after the Beis Hamikdash were destroyed.
Yes, that's the one.
I think 100, like 200 years after.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that emperor was killed in battle, and the one after him. And remember, the Jewish people didn't really have control. We didn't have any power. So we had to get we had the permission. And he lost in battle, and that was it. This type of thing happened when Ezra tried to build the second bais. And the Shomronim, who were there, they went and they tried to get the power, which was at that point was the Persian king of Cyrus. And they tried to get him to shut down the building. And they issued all types of slander, and they wrote letters. All this is documented in the book of Ezra and the book of Nehemiah. Take a look at the book of Nehemiah, is even more about this particular. And this is not, throughout, we're talking about after the second bais also. This is not an issue. This is not really a halachic issue. And we talked about, we had shows about this
not
before.
In other words, you're saying not halachic in the sense that that it's pretty much a given that there's an obligation, a halachic obligation, to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. Is that
right? There's no question.
No.
And we had last week we quoted the Yerushalmi that says, "Bini Beis Hamikdash is called them L'malchus Beis David," and the Bini Beis Hamikdash is before the building of the House of David. Now, this is what you expected. This is a natural progression. In other words, it doesn't have to be that the kingdom of the House of David is completely established before we can go up and try to do something by the Beis Hamikdash. And that is exactly why you have the Temple Institute that is talking about this and getting people involved. And hopefully with the people involved, we can move in a positive step, and Hashem will show His favor upon us because He sees us trying. So let me continue. You are aware that, this is what it says on the site, for those people who are not see, I'll just read it quickly. The Temple Mount is the holiest place in the world. Yet Jews and all non-Muslims are denied the right to pray in groups and even as individuals. This refusal is accompanied by their constant degradation, and they are granted no opportunity for any religious expression whatsoever on the Temple Mount. Only Jews are forced to wait an extended period of time before they're allowed through security. Only Jews are forced to present their IDs to the police. Only Jews are followed and harassed by Israeli police and Muslim Waqf guards throughout the entire visit on the Mount. Only Jews are arrested for crimes such as prayer, closing eyes, bowing down, or singing.
We had Yakuti Ogazowski on. He spontaneously bowed down. He prostrated himself on the Har HaBayis, and I believe he was escorted off and told he couldn't come back for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, and there were other dudes. There was a girl who went up with her father right before her wedding. She wanted to go up to the Har HaBayis before the wedding. And they also, they claimed that they moved their lips, and the father and the girl said, no, they didn't. And they brought him to the police station for moving their lips. Mm. What's that? What is that? It's just shocking. It really is shocking. In Israel, you get arrested for praying.
For davening. Mm.
It's really a shocking thing. The Prime Minister of Israel has failed to include the Temple Mount in his own heritage plan. This ties into what we were just talking about. Among those sites of historical, cultural, and religious significance to the Jewish people, to receive enhanced government budgeting for the improvement of access, upkeep, and beautification of the sites. The Mount has been completely abandoned to the Muslim authorities and is used by Muslims for the following activities, blasphemous activities. Illegal digs causing unparalleled destruction of archaeological evidence of the Holy Temple and the historical Jewish presence on the Mount. Endless incitement against the Jewish state and nation from within the mosques. Physical attacks against Jews on the Mount and down below at the Western Wall. In response to this, we are calling on all groups to unite to begin fighting this ongoing travesty. We are calling for a day of action to be known as, quote, International Temple Mount Awareness Day. We have no illusions, and we fully understand that a long battle is still in front of us, but yet we must begin the work. We must bring the Temple Mount back to our national heart and mind and begin to restore it to its former glory. Yes, this will be a long, difficult path, but so is our return to Zion after 2,000 years of exile. Our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents had their mission, and we have ours. We call on Jews to arrive at the Temple Mount Mugrabi Gate in the morning of March 16th, after immersion in a kosher mikveh, in accordance with Torah law, in order to ascend the Temple Mount. Please arrive at the gate no later than 7:15 a.m., and please come wearing non-leather shoes in accordance with Torah law. In addition, a guide will be available at 6:15 a.m. in the Rova Square. The Rova refers to the Jewish quarter of the Old City. He will be available at 6:15 to escort men to the Shuv U'Banim Mikvah in the Old City. Please be on time. Gentiles are likewise invited and encouraged to join us. Then it has an email here for any questions regarding this Aliyah. Two email addresses. I guess we could give it. Hatenua, H-A-T-E-N-U-A at gmail.com and Rabbi Richman at gmail.com. Rabbi Richman, R-A-B-B-I-R-I-C-H-M-A-N at gmail.com. You know, I was just told, just let me stop to tell you, Joe, that Rabbi Richman, who's involved with this temple, with the Temple Mount, do you know that he was summoned to the American Embassy in Israel?
It's kind of interesting. I think he's been on our program at least twice. And he was summoned. So here he is. This is a man who lives in Eretz Yisrael, right? He's called to the American Embassy. On what basis would he?
I have no idea if he went, if he didn't. I don't know any details, but
it's fascinating.
The basis is that, you know,
how did
you have a Temple Mount Awareness Day?
Yeah.
What are they getting involved? They're going to Israel. You have the United States government is getting involved. Who is it? I assume the State Department.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
I don't know who's involved. Who could? It's crazy.
I wonder if was he called to the embassy or the consulate? Because if I'm not mistaken, there's a separate office of the State Department which deals with the with that part of Eretz Yisrael.
Uh huh. Let me see if I have it here.
We're going to take a caller in just a moment. Before we take the caller,
He wrote here that mm-hmm. the U.S. Embassy, maybe, okay. but I'm not sure.
It could very well be the embassy.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just continue with this. We're almost done this. We call on Jews and Gentiles around the world to make known their dissatisfaction with the ongoing injustice to the Prime Minister and make it known to the Prime Minister of Israel by telephone, by fax, and by email. We call on Jews and Gentiles around the world to make March 16th, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, a day of solidarity with the Temple Mount and the prophetic vision of, quote, a house of prayer for all nations. We call on Jews and Gentiles around the world to mark March 16th, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, by assembling in prayer and discussion, spreading the word and raising awareness about the injustices being committed on the Temple Mount. We suggest holding prayer vigils outside Israeli consulates and the embassies. And finally, let me just give you the phone, fax, and email of the Prime Minister of Israel's office, the telephone number. When you dial Israel, you dial 011-972-2670-5555. Fax number 011-972-2566-4838. The email, which is easy for people, bnetanyahu@knesset.gov.il. That is B-N-E-T-A-N. Y-A-H-U, as it sounds, bnetanyahu@knesset, K-N-E-S-S-E-T, .gov.il. Okay, we have a caller. Norman, how are you tonight?
Yeah, hi. Okay, sorry, excuse me. I would not like to rain on your parade, but I don't think it's fair that you mention those who choose to go can go, And those who choose not, that you should mention that it's not according to all rabbinic authorities that you, a person should enter the Temple Mount. Those who choose to go, you just tell them which ones are permitted, and you can say others don't, and those who choose to go can go. But I think it's only fair to mention that.
Well, I don't exactly know. I don't know who says no, you shouldn't go. But I can tell you that whoever says you shouldn't go,
not go.
Say it again.
Rabbi Yashiv, Harav Rabbi Yosef Shalom Yashiv definitely says that person should not enter.
Well, if when you look into it, the reason they say not to enter is they say we don't exactly know where, and also don't get the Arabs upset.
Do they say that?
If you look carefully at the words,
yeah,
it's not. This is not a halachic reason. It's a political reason.
I'm not so sure about that, but I've seen other. I don't remember the exact wording. I've seen it written somewhere, but I don't remember the exact wording, and it seemed to be saying that it's a halachic problem.
Well, I mean, if something is impinges on the realm of politics, doesn't necessarily make it less halachic. You know, if someone just not just in general would say, you know, to do this, to do some action, whatever it is, would lead to, say, harm coming to somebody. That may be a political statement, but it's also a halachic statement to avoid harm under these circumstances.
Right. Now, let me ask you the following, Norman.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying anybody should go or not go. I'm just saying.
No. I understand what you're saying. I do understand what you're saying, but I just want to ask how you would view the following. For example, I know that Rav Shach in the past had said, I believe he had said that when people asked him as far as giving land for peace, right? He said, well, you know, it's okay. It might be okay if there'll be peace, right?
Right.
Now, I know for...
No, he said, if I can quote it correctly, he said that if it can bring about peace, it's not a problem. It's not a halachic problem. But he said that it will not bring about peace, so it shouldn't be done.
Really? I didn't hear it like that.
Yeah, that's how it's known. And it's, yeah, he said that since it will not bring about peace, it should not be done. But halachically, if it could, theoretically, he said in practice, it will not.
I didn't hear it like that. Okay, I'm not going to argue what I don't know for sure. But I didn't hear it that way. And I guess the question is, like, the question is, if the first, if what exactly is, like, strict, what exactly is the halacha, and why are people saying different things? Why are people saying to go up and not to go up? And at the end of the day, I mean, I've seen all the, from the people who actually go and really know what's going on, and reading, learning the tshuva of the Radvaz, and knows everything that's written, everything that you can lay out in front of you, is very clear. And I'd like somebody to explain it to me, somebody who understands, maybe who has the ear of Rav Eliashiv. So I mean, I don't exactly know who spoke to him. I think this is when, who was it? Was it, no, who's the fellow, not Rabin?
Perez, you're thinking of.
Perez, right. Yeah. Perez went and had a meeting. I think this came out of the meeting that Perez had with him. A very, very political context.
Well, still, I think, Norman, your point is wholly legitimate, that if someone...
No,
if somebody holds that by Rabbi Rav Eliashiv, if he says that a Pesach by Rav Eliashiv is something he'll follow, we wouldn't want to say to that person, go against the Pesach of your Rav. That's not our intention at all. I think that's your point.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I really don't know. I'm not sure how to answer that question. If I know that it's a mistake, am I going to say go and go along with the mistake?
No, but
especially when it's not clear. There's nothing in writing.
Oh, is nothing?
I'd like to see writing. See, that's the problem. There are two problems that I find with a lot of these things. This is the problem that I find with a lot of kokhores. The problem that I find, which at least over here, I can tell you that there have been a number of them, which have been totally, have totally misrepresented what the Rabbanim have actually meant to say, because they came and they said, this is what we want you to sign. They give their permission, and then they go off and they write it, and they write the rough signature on the bottom. And you have to look at the context of who's coming over to him. When Perez is going over to Rav Eliashiv, it's obvious that Perez does not want Jewish people going up to the Temple Mount.
But it's,
he couldn't care less about Judaism, period.
Yeah, but that's what's not obvious is that Rav Eliashiv necessarily made his decision based just because there was such a meeting or anything that was said.
I have no idea. Uh-huh. I don't have anything. See, by me, I feel very uncomfortable when things are not in writing in front of me. That's the truth. I like seeing things in writing. I like studying them. I like understanding them. And without it's just unclear to me. And then the next question is, which is the follow-up question, is when does a person say, when something is clear, at least to the person, and they could show, they could lay it down, hey, look, A, B, C, D, here are the sources. And you have Rabbanim saying the sources, and then there's a general question. When do you say, this is what's right, and that's what's not right? So the real two questions. It's not clear to me exactly what is being said. A lot of these things are unclear to me. And then the question is, after that, if even they have to back things up with sources or not.
They have to back, that's true. But they might sometimes have a source which I spoke to one time a big tzaddik, and I asked him a counsel, so he told me something, and he answered me, and then he told me afterwards, he says, that the stipler one time told somebody that, someone asked him what his reasoning was behind it, and he told him that the stipler said that they should not say the reasoning, because the person might say, because the tzaddik knows exactly what to answer, and the person might say, oh, it's not relevant over here.
Exactly.
So sometimes the stipler said you shouldn't disclose. If you know it's right, and the person won't understand, and he'll say it's not relevant for him, so sometimes you can't disclose it.
I could see that, you know, maybe...
I'm not saying that's the case here. It could be the case.
Right. But I think it's likely. I think, Norman, I think...
No, what I'm trying to say is that it should be made that there is some, you know, the difference of opinion here. And those who feel comfortable going up, it's their, you know, their option.
Right. Okay, so I will say like this. I believe that it is through people's going up that even the Rabbanim will come around and say that you can go up. And let me just explain while you're on the phone why I say that. I was going up to the temple up there, and there was a Belzer Chassid, and there was another, I think he was a, I think might have been above. I'm not sure which chassid the other one he was going up. And I said, "What do you say about the rabbanim who don't say to go up?" So the fellow, he laughed a little bit, and he told me that he wants to tell me a story. When Israel captured the Western Wall in 1967, there was some talk of whether people are allowed to go through the castle or not. There was discussion. They didn't have a clear thing, but it was right before Shavuos. Shavuos was the next week, and the people were so emotionally, they were so into it. It was such a tremendous thing as soon as they captured it that people rushed there, and the place was flocked on Yom Tov. Now, everybody's there, so whoever was thinking, should he be able to go? Because, you know, we don't exactly know. Maybe that's the Kaddish Kedoshim. Maybe that's all the Kaddish Kedoshim.
Mm-hmm.
No, nobody really knew because they don't have access of exactly where the line is. But everybody's going there. So now you're allowed to go there. This is what he told me. He tells me, I guarantee you, if you'll have throngs of people going up to the Temple Mount, because when you look in Halacha, you see there's nothing wrong with it because of that, you'll see at that point the people are saying maybe you shouldn't go up. They'll also say you could go up. But you hear what I'm saying?
I hear, but no, I can't. I didn't go into the.
Right. No, I'm just explaining like where I'm coming from. You understand that? You know, in other words, I'm looking at the sources and I'm looking at what's happening. I'm looking at right now we're not allowed to go up because the Arabs are there.
Who are you quoting that said you shouldn't go up? I don't know anybody who. Not go up. I mean, I don't know anybody who forbid it to go to the. To go to the
castle, but I'm explaining that. By 1967, I'm giving you a little something historical. This only happened in 1967.
Some forbid it. You're not giving any names. You're not giving any information.
But
telling a story of somebody. I don't know who said that guy was around in 1967 at all. You said that Belga Chassid. How old is he?
Okay, no, it's fair enough. I should come. I'm telling you just what I was told orally. Okay, that's what your question is a fair question.
You before that you don't like to quote things that what's called that you don't know
right,
that's
so
not in front of you.
I'm just explaining. But this happens to be a very common thing. What I'm trying to really just give you a flavor of the way
a lot
of these things work.
Let me point out something along that line that I don't think any of us would argue with. When it came to the wars in 47, 48, 56, 67, 73, and down till today, maybe not so much today, what I'm about to say is true, but it was in those days, it wasn't necessarily those Jews who were Shomer Shabbos and Shomer Mitzvahs and kept the Torah who took up the weapons and went to the battlefield and were fighting on the front. And yet they fought those wars, and because of those wars, which were fought, many Jews, many observant Jews, are now living in Eretz Yisrael in areas that were basically came about through wars that were able for Jews able to live there because of wars that were fought. So I think what you're saying, Yosef, is that basically if once something is established, it becomes a reality, and then the world has to deal with it. The whole declaration of a state of Israel, many Rabbanim were against it, and yet it was a reality. And once it's a reality, like Rav Bloch said, you have to deal with reality. And I think that's what you're attempting to
do. But I want to mix in with that if it's something which is clearly wrong, so then, you know, who's going to say? Nobody's ever going to say. But that would only happen when it's a case like this, where there's a lot of mixture of other reasons don't go because there's a lot of mixtures of external forces, not just halacha that you're not allowed to go up, just purely that you're not allowed to go up because you're tamei or things like that. It's mixture of politics or because don't anger the Muslims
possibly
were there. So in those type of cases, when you break through the external forces, the external reasons that are stopping the clear halacha from coming through, then it shines through afterwards.
If I could respond quickly, I don't know if that's the case, because if that would have been the case, they wouldn't have permitted it or forbidden it. They would have just, you know, they would have just said nothing. And if they
most people do exactly that. Most people are just silent on the issue.
What?
No, they do exactly what you're saying. It's very rare. Now, if you have Paris coming and you know, asking, you know, a guy from a leftist from the government, coming and paying a visit with his entourage, and he wants to hear certain things. He's forcing an answer on the spot.
I'm not sure, because I could see myself. I'm not a Rav. I don't have smicha, but I could just see a logic. If I could be arrogant enough to maybe say something like this, the Rav could say maybe 99 out of 100 people will go to the mikvah. 99 out of 100 will put on the non-leather shoes or no shoes at all. In other words, they'll follow and 99 out of 100 people going up will be very careful not to walk where they're told not to walk. But one person out of 100 maybe won't be so careful.
That's quite absurd. I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Right now, you know how many Jewish people are going up without going to the mikvah, irreligious Jews? They couldn't care less what somebody says is forbidden to go up. But maybe
they just feel that that community of who's going up on their own initiative, that they can't really have much influence over them anyway. Here you're talking about.
But it's not true. If they were positive.
Yeah.
But we know that's not true. Anybody knows anything about Kiruv, anybody knows just about human relations, knows that Jewish people, you know, they want to do the right thing. You know, if you have something open to them and you say, here, let's go up and this is the way to do it, they'll do it. And this is what Rav Moshe's son-in-law, Rav Moshe Tendler, that's his name, Rav Moshe Tendler, this is what he said. This was his complaint about the fact that they're forbidding it because of reasons. By the way, that's also a mixture of reasons.
Don't go up.
Some people might go into the wrong places. Who's going to watch them?
I'm not willing to back down on this. I can still see that someone does not want to be a stumbling block, a michshol to his own congregants. He doesn't want to be. There are plenty of opportunities to do kiruv and a lot of good things that a person can do politically, even go on the radio.
There's a famous Mishnah that talks about, exactly in terms of Tum and Tar, exactly how picks locks that Ganovim use to open doors. And the Gemara asks, wait a second, how do you go and talk about this? A Ganov could look and they could learn how to pick a lock. Right? Fair question. Oh. Sounds like what you're saying. Mm. And they quote. Then the answer. They quoted the pasuk.
I don't think. I'm not sure. I see the analogy. You know,
because you're putting things and you're teaching people for a positive reason. You're saying something which could be used in a negative.
Yeah, but I'm not saying anything. I'm saying that there may be a time and a place when these rabbanim will say, "Yes, the time has come. Let's go up on the Temple Mount." They don't feel at this time, at this place, right now.
Okay,
they don't
so
feel
that,
this is the time for their.
If that's the case, then that's what we're saying. And I'm not exactly sure. I understand that, but that's the thing. If we really want the Temple Mount to be built, if we want to move in that direction, you have to do something.
Yeah, but still, I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but I'm saying according to the opinion, the two wrongs don't make a right. You have everybody should follow their rav, and if they feel that that's the right thing to do, then they should do it the right thing.
There's no way I could.
All right,
there's no way I could force anybody who to follow.
Right.
But I could do is lay out the facts, lay out the logic, and talk about politically why, and halakhically why it's the right thing.
Yeah, you can quote some rabbi, and you can quote what he says.
No, I'm not quoting rabbis. I'm quoting the Gemara, the Yerushalmi.
But listen,
Normally, we appreciate your call.
The bottom line is that everybody, you have to look at things. You have to look into things on your own, and you have to see, and you have to learn. Learning is the most important thing. Learning is the antidote.
All right. Thank you very much, Norman, for your call.
Now, let us go and assist. So that's about the Temple Mount, and you can take a look at that. We are going now to look at a few of this unrest, and this just shows exactly why it's the other way around politically. You always have to not back away. I'm reading now, if this is from the New York Times, Israel's plans for two sites stir unrest in the West Bank. Scores of Palestinians clashed with Israeli forces in the West Bank city of Hebron on Monday, a day after Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu announced plans to include two hotly contested sites, a Hebron shrine and a tomb in another West Bank city. I love the way the Times, what a terrible paper. They don't even want to mention it. A Hebron shrine. You read this, maybe it's some mosque, right? And a tomb in another West Bank city. The which tomb? It just has to be anonymous. I think the New York Times also wants to worry about what the Arabs say. Terrible. Let me see. So, Mr. Netanyahu, skipping down, said he also planned to include Rachel's tomb. Quote, people must be familiar with their homeland and its cultural and historical vistas, he told the cabinet. This is what we will instill in this and coming generations, to the glory, if I may say, of the Jewish people. And, of course, you have the announcement drew sharp criticism from Palestinian officials and the Fatah Party, led by Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Okay. We have Moshe on the line. Hello, Moshe.
Yeah, hi. I'm not sure names or whatever, but you closed with saying before about you have to be worried about what the other, you know, like that there might be some people that won't follow halachic things about going up. So I'm just asking, like, are we always supposed to be worried about what everybody else is going to do? Should we worry?
There
are two points.
There's no
mitzvah. Point was more on Rabbanim, on the Rav. If somebody has a different Rav, it wasn't really so much on, what were you saying about, worried about what other people were saying?
No. I think, if I understood correctly, that the reason not to go up or not to allow people to go up is because some people might not go up halachically.
That's right. In other words, I was saying there's no specific mitzvah at this time that a person has to go up on the Temple Mount.
First of all, if the
Beis Hamikdash is standing, we have Shlosh HaGolim. If the Beis Hamikdash is standing, we have to bring Karban Pesach. There are many things that, there are many reasons why a person
But that's not true. There are actual mitzvahs to do now. There's a Mara Mikdash, the fear of the Holy Temple.
That can be done. The Mara Mikdash can be done in a Beis Knesset. I don't think it's any. Is there any less
Of course, it's less. I mean, the Beis Knesset is nice. You know, they also use an analogy of a Beis Knesset that's like a small Mikdash. They use an analogy of that the Jewish home is like a small Mikdash. They use an analogy that a person themselves is like a small Mikdash. So if we take that logic, we could just say a person doesn't have to do anything because they themselves, they're also like this.
Well, my point is like this. A person who doesn't go up on the Har HaBayis has not been, I don't think he's been mevatel any mitzvah. I don't think he's been mevatel a positive commandment, a mitzvah. There are many mitzvahs that a person is mechuyav every day, such as to put on tefillin on a weekday and so on. And it could be that these rabbanim are not in principle against any of this. I don't think they are. We're all davening.
Let me give you an analogy.
I'm trying to say that we're all davening every day. At the end of the davening, we say that the Beis Hamikdash should be rebuilt speedily. And we're all looking forward to the time we're going to be on the Har HaBayis together as a nation. But their point is simply...
Let me give you two analogies I disagree with you. Disagree with you very much. The reason I disagree with you is because that's similar to somebody. If you want to compare it to anything, we can compare it to somebody who, for whatever reason, a yosem, somebody who's, God forbid, doesn't have a parent. And because of that, they're not Mikayim. They don't do any Kibbut Aveim, right? Would you say that Kibbut Aveim is not a mitzvah because you're not doing it? It's not a mitzvah because, you know, this person doesn't have to do it?
Well, it's the
same type of thing. If you're not going up there and you're not doing Mar Mikdash, are you doing an Aveira because if you're not doing it, it's, at the very least, you're not doing a mitzvah that you could do. You don't have the opportunity of doing a mitzvah that you could.
I would say when I'm feel confident that I'm doing all the mitzvahs that I know are incumbent upon me, getting up on time, making it to the minyan, putting on tefillin.
Being
careful with my money. When I'm good at
that. You know something? I'm going to go tomorrow and I'm going to steal money, and then I'll tell you when I'm comfortable enough that I'm putting on tefillin. Then I'll worry about not doing geneva, not stealing. I don't even understand the logic to that. What does one thing have to do with the other? Let's get back to this conversation. It's an interesting conversation. Let's just take a very quick break and we'll come right back.
Are you looking for part-time work in advertising sales? The Jewish Activist Network has an opening for a sales representative. Email the Jewish Activist Network for details. The email address is media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. That's M-E-D-I-A, media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. And if you'd like to advertise with the Jewish Activist Network, email us at media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Do you have Shemus at your house or at your shul? Allow us to handle your Shemus for you. We handle your Shemus in accordance with halacha. Call 917-517-7486 for your Shemus handling. $20 for a 30-pound plastic kitchen bag, $8 for a plastic shopping bag. Larger quantities are eligible for our discount pricing. Call now for details. The number is 917-517-7486. Pesach is coming. Now is the time to schedule your Shemus handling. The number once again, 917-517-7486. Do you have email? Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails and Rabbi David Einenson's emails. The Jewish Activist Network emails are once a week and give you information about our upcoming shows, including links to background information. Rabbi Einenson's emails are a brief Divrei Torah that are immediately relevant to our lives. Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails by sending an email to media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Subscribe to Rabbi Einenson's emails by emailing media@secretscale.com. That's media, M-E-D-I-A, at secretscale, secretscale.com. If you do shopping in Midwood, Borough Park, Sheepshead Bay, Bensonhurst, Bay Ridge, Mill Basin, Crown Heights, or the Five Towns, pick up a free copy of The Views, a weekly available in many stores. To advertise in The Views, 718-377-8016. And you're listening to the Jewish Activist Network. We broadcast Wednesday nights right here on AM 620 from Wednesday midnight to 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And we have Yaakov with us on the line. Yaakov, welcome to the Jewish Activist Network.
Good evening. You guys are talking about something on March 16th. I have a problem on March 4th. And I used to talk to you guys about it, and Rabbi Rosenblum, who happens to be a very fantastic writer, said that Bernard Lander was a visionary, and he was a pioneer and a visionary, and then somebody in, like I told you guys, somebody on Matzav.com bought two tshuvas against this, against Touro College, one in Eretz Yisrael and one here in Brooklyn. And, you know, to call in, you know...
What's in Eretz Yisrael?
What?
What was in Eretz Yisrael?
One tshuva was signed by Rav Shach, the stipler of Moshe Rabiakov in Eretz Yisrael, and there was a Kolkari sign here against college by a lot of Rashivas. And as I showed you two guys, Rav Moshe Shita against colleges, he was against, you know, even college that has no apikursis or no ladies, and to call them in a visionary is connected as Torah. I don't think they're
it's mutually exclusive, because my understanding is like this. I spoke to someone who gave me the understanding of where what Moshe was saying, and according to him, according to this Rav, it's like this. It's specifically because Rabbi Lander made a learning environment that was in line with halacha and that was very fine and very attractive. Specifically for that reason, he was against it, because it would draw people away who were learning at the highest levels of Torah. So to say that one Rav is against it doesn't mean that what he's against was necessarily against halacha itself.
Well, I don't understand. Right. What you're saying is a reminder that probably the good students wouldn't go to a Karuvah college, but they would go to Torah college.
That's right.
Because,
You're right. That's also to do. Right. So it doesn't mean that there was anything wrong with Torah on a halachic level. Just the opposite. It was because it was so fine and so elevated as far as Kedusha that was.
So Rashi says not to go. Call us to whatever you want. He says it's to go.
We have a person. We have a Rabbi Einenson also, who is a big Talmud.
Okay. So meanwhile, if you look at Matzis, the two.
But listen, I went over the Truva pretty carefully.
Okay.
And my understanding at this point is that Rav Moshe was concerned because of the tremendous dearth. I'm not exactly sure what year it was written. It was written many years ago, and he was very concerned about the dearth of Talmidei Chachamim.
Right.
And many people were not, and we were losing. We did not have people studying and learning. Right. And this is especially after the loss of tremendous Rabbanim and Talmidei Chachamim during the Holocaust.
Right.
And I believe, the way I understand the Tshuva, is that because of that, there were people now learning and studying, and he was very concerned that they would turn away from becoming Rabbanim and the next generation
exactly.
of Rabbanim.
But that goes for the masses.
But people did attend.
You just can't flip a coin and decide you want to go to college.
He was concerned about the top students who were going to stay.
It doesn't say that.
But the reality is, people did attend Reb Moshe's yeshiva and they did go to college.
That's right.
They don't stop college.
I'm telling you a fact. Reb Moshe's yeshiva does not stop college, and they allow it.
The situation is behind it, but he writes in the tshuva again. The tshuva was to all Menahalim who were probably Menahalim of 12th graders, and he tells them not only the smart.
But again, ignoring the fact that even in that tshuva, Rav Moshe makes reference to the Holocaust, and that the Rabbanim were wiped out, and we need Rabbanim.
Less Torah will be circulating in the world. Exactly.
Why would he mention about the Holocaust in the tshuva?
The Torah in America was wiped out. Torah in Europe was wiped out.
Yeah. So what is the relevance of that to the tshuva? You
have to build more Torah.
Okay, in other words, so what I'm saying is that he was concerned at the time. It wasn't so many years after, and it was very, very, there was a big dearth, and he was concerned.
Nothing to do with the people who were big Baal Kishrinus or big good heads. Even the ones who don't have good heads have to circulate Torah in the world.
At that point, when we didn't have any, no, he was worried about the top students. He was worried that the top students would leave, and you wouldn't have people becoming big Rabbanim. That's what he was concerned about. So, we could go over to Tshuva. I mean, I did want to get back to you off the air, and I did one time, and I would like to also when I, and I don't mind going out of the Tshuva word for word with you. Anyways, hopefully we'll be in touch about that. Let's just the last thing that we were going to talk about. I just wanted to get to. And I definitely thank Yaakov for that call, and please definitely keep us on track. If what we're saying is wrong, if you think it's wrong, even if it's right, it doesn't make a difference, let us know. U.S. slams Israel over designating heritage sites. The Obama administration, this is in the Washington Post, the Obama administration criticized Israel Wednesday for designating two shrines on Palestinian territory as national heritage sites. The criticism came as Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said she hopes long-stalled peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians will resume. So it comes on and it continues and talks about how they were demanding that Israel not make them heritage sites. It's crazy. Frontpagemag.com. Israel's latest sin, honoring its heritage. I think that says it all. And I think it's very good that Israel honors its heritage and does this. Okay. Yosef, he was the fellow who was going to talk about the Temple Institute. I'm not sure if he's going to make it. He was trying to call him. He's in Eretz Yisrael right now, and he's not going to be on at this point. But I do want to just mention once again the different sites, and to remind you what we were talking about. We were talking about templeinstitute.com.org, templeinstitute.org, and you can look at this, and if you'd like to help out to make it And if you want to get daily updates, you should go to that. And also, be involved with us. Give us calls. Send email media@JewishActivistNetwork.com.
One more website, tmount.org, for daily updates. Tune in next week, Wednesday night at midnight, to the Jewish Activist Network.